I've actually got some cool stuff this week, which I'm pretty excited about.
I'll believe it when I hear it.
We haven't even started and already
I'm just funny all the time. I can't turn it off.
You can't turn it off. You're just incredible.
It's not like a tap.
Right, we'll just crack on then.
Science with Knob Jokes.
Hello and welcome to our brand new episode of Science with Knob Jokes. I'm Dr. Sam Godfrey, the leader of this here ship, taking you on a voyage of discovery.
That's fake news. I'm the leader. I'm Daisy Air.
And this is, yeah, those dulcet tones are, Daisy.
Could you sound more excited that I'm here,
sorry, no, I am, Vic. I'm overwhelmed. For those people who are new to our show, I imagine the burgeoning...
All of you.
All of you. Yeah, this is episode three, though, this is.
Shit.
Yeah.
This has gone further than I wanted.
Not me. No, I'm holding out for 40, minimum.
Oh, good.
Just because I get to spend time with you.
Yeah, this is why this has gone further than I wanted. This is...
Right, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, the whole purpose of this show is we talk about science, we talk about exciting things that are happening out in the world that will get people thinking, wow, the world's actually in better situation.
Wow!
Wow, that's what they'll be thinking. And Daisy, who's a little bit more, let's say, cynical.
Yeah, what are you going to say, Sam? A little bit what?
Cynical. I was going to say weathered, but that made it sound like it was an
weathered.
Appearance thing.
You make
it
sound leathery. Yeah. Like a handbag.
Leathery Daisy Eyre, who is our expert, our resident expert in theology, and she will be casting her verdict on the science that we talk about, which is the whole
I can
point.
Tell you already, I hate it.
Again, that's positive from Daisy. So, the very first section, as always, we're going to start with fit science.
Fit science.
So the first one, you might have seen this in the news, it was really cool. So it's an example of gene therapy. And there was this German, well, this boy living in Germany called Hassan, and he has this condition called junctional epidermolysis bullosa, I believe it's pronounced.
Do you really believe that's how it's pronounced? Because I mean, I don't believe a word of it.
My reading skills tell me it's pronounced something like that. and about 500,000 people in the world have a form of this disease. And basically what this means in his case is that if you think of like how the skin's attached to your body, it's kind of like it's got all these proteins that stick out from the skin into the layer below, a bit like how Velcro sticks together.
Right, okay.
And there's a certain protein involved in this called laminin 332, and he's lacking that. It's faulty in him, which basically means his skin can just shed at any point. He obviously going to bleed very easily. He's really prone to things like infections. It's a life-threatening disease.
Well, it sounds like a boy.
And he's like, I think he's an 8-year-old boy.
Hassan.
Like, poor little Hassan. Anyway, this previously has been untreatable, this kind of condition. Some people have varying levels of it. And what some scientists from Germany and Italy did is they took a sample of his skin. They got the stem cells from that skin. These are the starter cells that go on to sort of always grow new skin. And then they used a virus to infect that those skin cells. And the virus carried with it the correct gene. So the virus, basically, the way a virus works is it injects its genetic material into something. So it injected the correct gene for laminin 332. So the new skin cells that are growing actually have that sort of Velcro-like hooking mechanism. They grafted it back onto the boy. He's now had something like 80% skin grafts, and the skin's holding, and he's now got functional skin, and he's able to go about a life like normal.
That's phenomenal.
Isn't it cool?
That's ridiculous. Why didn't anyone do that sooner?
It's tricky. It's tricky. Science like that's hard. This is,
It doesn't sound hard, I'll be honest. Sounds like someone should have come at that
years ago. Yeah. It's like, yeah, no, you're right. God, idiot scientists should have got there faster.
I think that's what I'm going for, though.
Yeah. They, I'm lazy. That's probably...
I think probably they were resting on their laurels of previous discoveries and just thought, we've done all we can here.
That's an interesting take on it. I mean, I took a different take on it, which is, oh my God, gene therapy is becoming
no,
reality.
Don't get me wrong. I think it's fantastic. I think great for Hassan, great for others. Wonderful.
Right.
Wonderful. Should have got there quicker.
Right, okay, fine. Technology not being there until recently.
Again, why?
Why, right, yeah. You're right, actually.
I know.
You're right. I saw an interesting thing around that had had the Romans and the Chinese got together like thousands of years ago, like we'd have landed on the moon in the 1600s. So laziness, really.
Yeah, I think we should just pull our fingers out of it.
But I suppose the problem is it's not the most constructive feedback. <'cause>...
Well, no, it's constructive for the future, isn't it? Like, right. I think if I could just give one message to scientists, hi, try harder.
Wow. Daisy Eyre making friends across the scientific community.
Your people need you.
So there we go. So fit or not, is that fit science?
Yeah, it's great. I think what I like is that's science not just for science's sake. That's actually going to have a proper impact on people's lives, which I really like.
Right, yeah.
Because sometimes I hear about science and I'm like, no, it's not that it's not interesting, but like, who does that help?
Hmm.
Whereas this, helpful.
Well, hold on to that thought because I've got some doozies coming up in a minute. Right, next item on our Fit Science. There's a organisation in America called DARPA, which is like the Defence Agency Research.
They sound shadowy.
They do sound shadowy. They want to bioengineer spy plants.
Nope.
just straight no.
There's too many words in there that sound, you know, a bit illicit.
Well, the reason I got excited when I read this because I thought
bioengineer. Sam, you get excited when you read anything.
It's not always true. It's pretty much true. Yeah, that's always true.
Yep.
What they want to do, I thought, when I read this, like, oh, wow, these are going to be plants that can somehow listen to you. And I imagine, like, a sort of a daffodil just turning its head to, like, spy on you. And that would be amazing. It's actually...
Would it?
No. No.
Not everything has to be amazing, Sam. Sometimes it can be a bit shit.
Yeah, I'm sure it's technically very difficult what they want to do. What it is... they want to change the qualities of the plant so it can do things like monitor the environment, check for chemical leaks, see whether there's radiation exposure, bacteria in the air. So presumably you could sprinkle them around somewhere and then wander back over. A botanist could go over and check and go, oh, there is a chemical leak here. They said they weren't playing with these chemicals. We now know they're making mustard gas or something like that.
Right. Okay. Is this anything... A person couldn't do with the correct equipment.
Well, yeah, it's not... with the correct equipment, sure.
Yeah, I just...
Okay, well, so we'll stay on the bioengineering plants in general. You're not a fan of this one.
Do you know what? It doesn't grab me.
Okay, so around... I went on a sort of a clicking link after I read about this. You know, when you sort of...
One of them clicking links.
I think that's a technical term for any of our listeners. Apologies for the jargon there.
We're not good with computers.
I was clicking through various different stuff and I found a couple of other examples of bioengineering on plants, which I thought you might find more interesting. So these haven't happened, but they might. One of them, which I can see flaws with straight away, but is pretty cool, is you seed a flowering crop over areas where there's mines, like a minefield,
right.
And where those have leached minerals into the soil, it flowers a different colour, so you can tell where the mines are and
great.
Where they're not. Well, you say great, but like I couldn't help thinking, like, if one of them doesn't flower, it's not as robust as...
No, I don't think it's the most reliable system for detecting a mine. Sure. But I think it's better than no system for detecting a mine.
Well, they use trained rats, don't they? They use they're these big rats that they train up that can sniff out mines, and they actually use them to search for mines. And they're too light to detonate the mine if they tread on them.
I believe this to be true, but it also sounds like a lie.
It's true. It's really cool. I will send you a link maybe one day.
A clicking link.
Yeah, a clicking okay. link. So that's one, minefield thing. So I saw some flaws of it, but I liked the hustle.
I like the idea.
This one I think is cooler. Polio vaccine and bananas. So you genetically engineer...
give bananas polio? No one wants polio bananas.
Just in an eye and lung. For what purpose?
Yeah, but why?
It's polio vaccine, which is really successful, and we're not far from eradicating polio now, but there's regions of the world which is quite hard to get the vaccines to. You often need refrigeration and so forth. If you could genetically engineer the bananas to actually include the polio vaccine,
ooh.
You could hand out bunches of bananas to people. They eat the banana, vaccinated against polio.
Yes, great. It does rely on people liking bananas, though, and I know a lot of people who don't like bananas.
Mm.
So I think choose a less controversial fruit.
Okay.
Like, everyone likes, you know, grapes, don't they?
You're right, actually, grapes.
Grapes.
I've not heard anyone say they don't like grapes.
Everyone.
Unless you get seeds in them, that's always
well.
Annoying.
A seedless grape, then we have those. So I think polio grapes.
So you've once again improved science for the world.
That's what I do.
The people are going to be listening to this, and you did a really creepy wink though. Just that I didn't like that.
Well, it's when I'm improving science, I just help myself.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's sort of this smug.
I become for some reason a Lothario.
So, fit or not on the whole form of bioengineering plants?
Right. I'd say it was averagely hot.
Averagely hot.
Well, I think sometimes...
6 out of 10?
Yeah, I mean, I'd walk past it.
Oh, would you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not one that would make you turn your head.
I wouldn't turn my head. I think a lot of the time it's just messing about for no reason. So I think unless you can legitimately make it useful, don't bother.
But I suppose you don't know what's going to be useful until you look sometimes.
But polio bananas, you've already decided what the purpose is, haven't you? You're not just messing about with bananas at this stage, are you? You've decided we're doing polio bananas here.
Yeah.
I'm doing minefield poppies or whatever. Like... You've decided what your purpose is.
Okay,
so if it doesn't serve the purpose properly, end it.
Right.
There you go. Science.
It's wisdom. Yeah. Cool. Next one.
Yeah.
You know old Charles Darwin?
I mean, not personally, but yeah.
Chucky D.
I'm you know, aware.
Chucky D himself, as...
As nobody ever calls him.
I do, because I'm a little bit cooler than the rest.
Okay.
Sure. And Chucky Dizzle.
Not Chucky Dizzle.
Okay, Charles Darwin, the guy that proposed Origin of the Species, is where our theory of evolution came from. He's a pretty big deal in science.
Yeah, I think everyone knows who Charles Darwin is.
he did all his work on the Galapagos Islands, or a lot of it. That's where he went out and he like was looking at the beaks of different birds and seeing how they evolve over time and so on.
The big tortoises and all that.
This was obviously happened 150 years ago or whatever it was, in the 1800s. Recently they've just discovered a new species of finch on the Galapagos Islands that has evolved in the last 40 years.
That's
so
mad.
It's really cool. And but it's a different type of evolution to what we know about, because normal evolution is like tiny genetic changes which may or may not be an advantage, and over time, if they Charles Darwin's theory was that if they do give you like a slightly longer beak, you can then get a different flower that you couldn't get at before, and then in time you pass that on to a new species and so on. This was much, much quicker. Normally it's millions and billions of years of evolution to get this to happen. What happened in this case is a finch from one island flew to another island, mated, and you got a cross species. Now you get this in nature sometimes, like is it a mule's a cross between a donkey and a horse, isn't it? But normally the offspring are infertile. In this case, the two birds, finches, mated, the offspring were fertile, but also they were very different from both parents.
Ooh.
And their mating calls and stuff didn't attract either of the original parent species. They only attracted their own kind.
That's so weird.
So they've ended up with this new type of finch that is larger, it eats a different food, it has different behaviours, it has a different mating call, and it now is this establishing population of finches which are different from
the
parent
ones.
And we didn't know that kind of evolution happened, but it's another way that evolution comes about, and it happened where the whole story of evolution began.
I like that as a narrative.
It's almost poetic, I felt.
Yeah, I think that's good. I bet Charles Darwin is gutted he missed it. Stuck around a bit longer.
Cussing it. Yeah.
He'd have seen
another couple of hundred years.
I like that both for the actual thing and the poetic justice of it.
Oh, okay. That's nice. So that's one that you maybe... That's sort of like maybe not like, whoa, four, but...
It's pretty. I'd treat it kindly. Yeah.
Oh. Oh, that's nice. So this is dating material.
Yeah. I'd marry this one.
Wow. Insights there from Daisy Eyre.
Sam's meaty story.
Have you heard of Huntington's disease?
Yep.
Okay, so...
I know what you're going to tell me.
Have you read this?
And I'm excited.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Well, I will tell our listeners then. I won't talk to you about this because you know this one.
But I'm going to leave for a bit.
So Huntington's disease is is this disease where around the ages 30 to 40, if someone has this gene, this faulty Huntington gene, they start to get a degenerative brain disease that kills them, ultimately. And what happens is that in our bodies, all of us have the gene from a molecule, a protein called Huntington, which is involved in how nerves function and how they sort of communicate to each other. Now, it's actually all around our body, but it only seems to affect our brain. Now, with people with Huntington's disease, they have a faulty copy of this gene. They have a few too many genetic letters stuck in there. And instead of it being this helpful thing which helps your nerves, it becomes a poison. But it doesn't start to affect you until you're in your 30s or 40s, where people have often had kids. And that means they've got a 50% chance of passing it on to their children.
Very cruel.
So when someone is diagnosed with Huntington's disease, what they then have to do, their children then have a decision as, do they want to find out if they have the disease or not? Because there's nothing that can be done. This disease kills everyone that gets it. Do you want to live with that knowledge that you've got a fatal disease? Do you want to risk having children and risk passing it on to other people? And so I believe that if you're in a situation where you have to be tested for this, you're given counselling before you make that decision, because it's really, it's huge.
It's life-altering, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. There's been nothing that could be done until recently. We've got the first glimmer of hope, and it's really cool. So some scientists at University College London were looking at how the gene works, and the way that our genes, sort of, genes are instructions in the body, and what that happens is those instructions get turned into little messengers called messenger RNA, which tells the machinery of a cell to make insulin, make hair, whatever.
Some hair, please.
Hair, please. What the team in UCL did is they designed a drug that will effectively swap these messages out the sky. So by injecting someone in their spinal cord, because it just stops that message getting through. And what they've found is that, and they've started testing this in people, it seems to be well received. It's stopping further degeneration. In animal models, when they've tested it there, they've seen long-term protection from this. And whilst this isn't a cure, it's the very first real chance of hope for these people that previously would have had nothing. Now, ultimately, we want to maybe get to a place where we can fix the gene and then they haven't got that problem anymore. But until we do that, this is absolutely life-altering.
I think it's one of the best things I've heard in a long time.
Yeah.
Imagine being in a position where you have this illness where nothing can be done for you, nothing at all, and all of a sudden there's something that gives you that little bit of hope that maybe you or your children or your family, you know, something can happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
You might not have to live with this in the way that you have before. I think it's phenomenally good news.
Yeah, agree completely.
I'm not even going to say anything sarcastic about it. I just think it's great.
Wow, this is a first.
I know, this isn't how we usually operate.
No, it's not.
Sorry, I made it weird. You know, when it comes to the brain, there's so much we don't know about it, and yet there's this huge, like, gamut of neurological conditions that people are suffering from out there. So I think any news is good news.
Yeah, completely. Brain-wise. Certainly things like, Alzheimer's and
Parkinson's
disease, multiple sclerosis.
Even things like epilepsy, when most of it's idiopathic, we don't know what causes it.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's so much to know about the brain.
Yeah, it's...
More brain work, please, scientists.
There we go. So more brain work. Do your work faster. Get there a couple of hundred years ago. And only have a purpose for what you're doing. But if it's a silly purpose...
I don't think asking for a purpose to your work is...
But that's the whole point of blue sky thinking and discovering you don't know where it's going.
Be purposeful.
It's exciting. It's like... I love that sort of someone... That just inherent curiosity of someone going... Oh, you know what? I'm going to see what this does. Oh, wow, discovered penicillin.
By all means, be curious. But, like, go somewhere with it.
All right. I mean, that's a reasonable ask. Don't just fanny about. Yeah.
I don't think I'm being unreasonable.
Look, I've made a jellyfish with rhythm. Well done.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't need that. Okay. Nobody wants it.
You know what, though? A jellyfish with rhythm would be pretty cool.
Look, am I saying I don't want to see it? No, not really. I do want to see that. But do we need it as a species? No, we don't.
No. Rhythmic jellyfish.
And also, we don't know jellyfish don't have rhythm.
It's true. I've seen on some of David Attenborough's stuff, they like move and they perfectly time in with the beat of the music, or like the sound effect that gets played. Now, how could they do that if they didn't have rhythm?
Yeah, I think that's a jellyfish's natural rhythm coming through. Yeah.
Yeah, because the guy underwater filming it, he's got a little speaker playing the soundtrack.
He's got a little boombox on his shoulder.
And they're going... Boop, 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 boop. And then it moves a fin like that.
A fin? You think jellyfish have fins? Do you know what a jellyfish is? No, you don't know, do you?
Awkward.
Would you rather?
I have got an exciting would you rather for you today. Ooh. So, we've had some interesting would you rathers before. I think you joined a cult.
I've done all sorts of would you rather.
You got your throat slit.
Yeah.
You got intimate with Marie Curie.
I regret nothing.
No, you were right. That was one of your finest conquests. So today's one's slightly different. So what I'm going to do instead is I'm going to let you choose an X-Man superpower. But your mutation, you will choose by picking a gene name mutation.
Oh, Christ.
And from that, I will then tell you what your superpower is.
Okay.
Is that clear? So,
I mean,
now,
sort of.
The gene names I'm using are from fruit flies, you know, the little things you get around your bin.
Little Drosophila.
Exactly. Oh, I love how much science you actually know. See, you pretend to be.
I am not as stupid as you think I am.
I'd never thought you were stupid.
Boys.
No, I mean, obnoxious, sure, but not stupid.
Well, both can be true.
So, fruit fly or Drosophila, they have about 65% of the same genes that we do. And these are the genes that lay down the basic foundations of life, because they're more primitive than us. It's a bit like how
some of us
all of us. I mean, I'm primitive in my intellect, sure, but in terms of my evolution level, I'm as evolved as the next man.
That's the best we could say for you.
Sam Godfrey, as evolved as the next man.
No more, no less.
So we do a lot of studying of fruit flies because they've got these basic genes, but a lot simplified. It's sort of a bit like how if you wanted to learn how a car works, you wouldn't study a Formula One car, you might study a sort of a basic old-fashioned car with an engine, four wheels and a couple of axles,
I guess,
that kind of thing, because you can kind of work out the basics of it, but you're not getting all mixed up with Kerr's energy recovery stuff. And
I mean, I'd never study a car, so it's moot, isn't
Well, that's the principle of studying something like fruit flies. And they also sleep at night, like us, so which is pretty handy. And their life cycle is 2 weeks. So if you want to study multiple generations and sort of evolve in new traits or something, it's pretty easy to do.
Long to get much done, is it? 2 weeks.
2 weeks, yeah. I mean, they don't tend to have that packed schedules.
Look, you don't know they're in our lives.
You know, you're right. Based on my observations in the lab, I've rarely seen them looking busy.
No, but have you seen them looking, you know, contemplative or sad?
Actually, maybe they're joyful. They could be some of the greatest philosophers amongst us.
Exactly, but we don't know because they've only got 2 weeks and they haven't worked out how to communicate any of that yet.
Poor fruit fly.
Yeah.
Well, when they discover new genes in these, they give them a name. And so there's names like hedgehog gene, because if you change that gene, the fruit fly looks a bit like a hedgehog. It goes all spiky. And so it gets called hedgehog. And the names are sometimes quite amusing. It's examples of science humour coming out.
Which is the best kind.
It is the best kind. So I've got three gene names for you.
Okay.
And you've got to pick one of them. So
the
gene names for you to choose for, and this is going to become your superpower,
right.
There's Lush, Ken and Barbie, or Methuselah.
Ooh. Oh, gosh, this is so hard. So, Lush. I don't like the connotations that come with Lush, actually.
Okay.
Because I think, like, if someone drinks too much, you say they're a bit of a lush, don't
right.
you? And I don't want people to think I am a bit of a lush.
I mean, they're not necessarily going to judge you based on this.
You don't
it's
know
not
what
your, it's not your superpower name, but it's the quality that this bestows upon you. But I'm not telling you what that quality is.
So they would think I was lush.
I can't comment at this stage.
Ken and Barbie doesn't really speak to me, to be honest. So Ken and Barbie, how could I be Ken and
And I assume it's named that way around for, like, copyright reasons as well in the
Barbie
gene
and Ken.
Name.
But yeah, I don't think that's very feminist, actually. Why would it not be Barbie and Ken? I think Barbie's the star of the show here.
I mean, again, I can't comment.
Whereas
at this stage.
Methuselah,
uh-huh.
I think confers quite a lot of nobility.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to be Methuselah.
Okay. So, I mean, it's a good choice. So, Methuselah, I mean, you're the biblical person, you know, you're
Jesus.
The theologian. Jesus. Methuselah was... He wasn't Jesus, I know that much.
No, he wasn't.
So, what was Methuselah?
I think he was one of the kings in the Old Testament, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think so. Wasn't he, and he was the really old guy.
Yeah.
So, this gene, if you have the Methuselah gene, you live longer. So, you've extended your lifespan, which is...
Wunderbar.
Which is great.
So, I could be a fruit fly who lives...
Three weeks. Four, maybe. I don't know how long
maybe
this extended is.
Maybe I could get some records down on paper.
I mean, Methuselah, I think, lived to 600 and something.
I think longer, actually.
Was it even longer than that?
They used to live to, like, 800, 900.
They must have had a different calendar, mustn't they? Do you reckon?
Maybe they did just live... I mean, we don't know, Sam.
No, it's true. Archaeological...
We probably do know, but we don't know.
I didn't Google this. I assume this was your area of expertise.
I think Methuselah lived to about 800, 900.
Wow. That's pretty old.
Oh, that were... Off the top of my head. There's a lot of names in the Bible, so
there
I don't
are.
Know them all.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Methuselah was about 900.
Right, so you were... I think you picked the best of them.
Yes.
Lush, you were correct. You would be very attracted to alcohol with the Lush gene.
Knew it!
So the fruit fly with Lush, love alcohol. Ken and Barbie, you would have no external genitalia.
I understand. It's good, isn't it?
Right. I then thought maybe a little fun game for you is guess what these genes do. So, Maggie gene.
Like Margaret Thatcher. Does she introduce poll tax?
Yeah, and they're really harsh on minors.
Yeah. They hate the working class, they these do. Guys.
No, it's Maggie from The Simpsons. Maggie Simpson.
That shows my biases there, doesn't it? Mute?
No, but it's a good idea. Doesn't develop past a certain stage.
No, that makes
so
sense.
So stays like a baby, yeah. Basically. Tin Man.
What was it? Is it the Tin Man has no soul?
What is it? That's dark.
No,
it's very dark.
No, in the Wizard of Oz, is it that he's got no heart? Or something?
No heart. Yes,
no,
you know.
Not no soul. If you, how would you know
if
that?
You change, if you delete the Tin Man gene, a Drosophila has no heart. Groucho Marx.
Hang on. Wait.
Oh, sorry. No, yeah, go back.
How does it live?
Well, it doesn't.
Okay, go on.
So, yeah, the embryo won't live. It's not going to be a living one. Groucho Marx.
Does it have a moustache?
Yeah.
Do you see, when I talk about things being without purpose, why do you need to give a fruit fly a moustache?
Right, you don't... But that's not what they're doing, because they don't know what genes they're going to find. Okay. So you're knocking out lots of different genes, and one of them might just so happen to be a gene which is involved in muscular dystrophy, and you wouldn't know until you look.
Okay.
But if you find a new one, you're not going to go, not important, ignore it. You need to mark it so others know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they didn't mean to.
And also, who knows where it goes? Maybe it's like hair, facial hair on a Drosophila, but it might ultimately one day lead to something like a cure for alopecia or something.
Right,
you see?
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm happy with it now.
Now, this one I thought was pretty clever. Cleopatra. I mean, what do you know about her?
Well, I know that she was killed by an asp.
Nailed it. Right, there's a gene called asp, and if the Cleopatra gene is sort of either activated or deactivated or whatever, asp becomes fatal.
No, that's so clever.
Isn't it? I love that little bit of her.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well done, science.
Yeah, well done, science.
We're back on speaking terms, science.
Yeah. Oh wow, we rescued it there.
Yeah. Pulled it back.
There we go. Well, I think that's a pretty good battle through.
I liked that.
Do you have any thoughts from today's episode at all?
As I said before, I'm just really pleased with all the neuro stuff that's going on at the moment. All the Huntington's disease work, I am genuinely thrilled with. And also now I know about the Drosophila gene names. I am going to do some more research into them because I am thoroughly charmed.
They are good.
Yeah, I'm really pleased with
them. They are
that.
Really good. Awesome. Well, if you wanted to get in touch with us, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at ScienceManSam.
And I'm at DaisyGrace88.
And thank you all for listening.
Thanks.
What do you call a ghost's erection?
Oh, God. I don't know.
A boner.
Oh.